a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 288. Oh, man. It is an early morning episode. I am really, really tired. I've just had this insomnia thing going for a couple of nights where I go to bed and then I, at a decent hour, sometimes a little late, then I wake up at like 3:30, 2:30 to 3:30, 4 o'clock, just cannot go back to sleep. So I'm on like tops 4 hours right now, probably 3:15, something like that. So I'm feeling okay so far, but it's I haven't been up long and I've already had some caffeine. So here's some more caffeine going in. Delicious Rwanda Niamsheke from Commonwealth Coffee. I'm trying to coax Jason from Commonwealth onto the show. We're having lunch on Friday, and I'm just gonna cook for him at my house because I, based on what I'm doing for Lent, it's almost impossible for me to eat out for a while. I mean, not impossible, but a little tricky. So, which we'll get into later. So anyway, it is Ash Wednesday. So even though it is not a holy day of obligation, strangely enough, everyone thinks it is, get your ash to mass. Get it? See what I did there with Ash Wednesday? Get your ash to mass. I saw a meme about that. So yeah, it's funny. It's like, before I go into the Ash Wednesday thing, because that's kind of be Ash Wednesday in Lent is going to be kind of the bulk theme of the show today. But I just wanted to mention a couple things first. For starters, I didn't see the president's speech last night. I had a dishwasher being delivered, quite honestly, to my cafe, and I had to sit around. And while the dishwasher was being delivered, I was having a meeting with Jacob Machado. Shout out to Jacob Machado. What a cool guy. I'm a giant fan of Jake. He came over, and we were talking about Calyx and this launch we're doing and kind of the overall concept of what we're trying to do. And we ended up in a really beautiful conversation, ranging everywhere from like this analog space that we're wanting to create and why that's important and being present in the moment with persons is important. And we went all the way to like this conversation. I've been having a lot of conversations with people here lately. It's been coming at me. I've been thinking about it and mentioning it. And so I'm having a lot of conversations about Eros and about, how we've kind of gotten in the world, like there's basically there being arm's length and numb or there's lust. Those are the two options and never the twain shall meet. And this strong sexual desire, strong attractive desire that is a perfectly good, normal, natural thing in the middle is kind of being lost. So we had a long conversation about that, but anyway, so I didn't get to see the president's speech, but I read a little bit of the when I couldn't sleep last night, I opened my phone, which is a bad idea, and read a little bit of news, and it was interesting. You were seeing people like Van Jones and Anderson Cooper and some of these fairly left-wing human beings saying that in that moment last night when President Trump – still hard for me to say, when President Trump acknowledged the widow of that fallen Marine from the Yemen mission, and that moment and how he did it was Van Jones said he became the president. He became the president in that moment. And so I guess that a lot of people are kind of like saying, okay, look, it was a difference in substance, a difference in style, but not in substance. But supposedly our president finally pivoted. And I think that one of the great Van Jones, that if you find that Van Jones commentary, I'll try to find it, maybe put it up. I thought he really nailed it in a lot of ways. He says, look, he had that moment where we connected. He carried himself a certain way. He was presidential. He became, you know, he had this. He says, if he can realize, oh, wow, I got what I wanted out of that moment. That's actually what people need. That's what being a president looks like. And not being, he said, this divisive cartoon character, which is what he's been. I mean, it really has been this divisive cartoon character. There's kind of this, this strange, over-the-top person. But if he can figure out, oh, hey, I had to learn how to do the reality TV thing, and this is how you do that. This is how you do the politics thing. Oh, look, I got what I wanted out of this. Oh, this is, oh, okay, I don't have to be that. I mean, whatever, I don't care. Van Jones said he'll be, if he can figure out how to string the bunch of those moments together, he'll be there 8 years. Which I'm just like, wow, that's amazing to hear out of someone like Van Jones' mouth. But anyway, enough politics. I'm just glad to hear that. From what I understand, the clips I heard on the way home on the radio, he talked about the end of Black History Month. He talked about, he openly just kind of like condemned all the anti-Semitic acts that are happening with these graveyards and Jewish centers and stuff like that. And evidently, the speech was way more presidential. In the words of one of my friends I heard, says, well, he's kind of lowered the bar to where if he just did a normal, remotely normal, humane political speech that wasn't a divisive cartoon character, then everyone's going to talk about how presidential it was, because he's kind of lowered the bar. But anyway, that's the thing that's bothered me the most about the Trump campaign and the way he's been run, is just this harsh, completely just, you know, uncompassionate, unthoughtful shouting of bullet points. I kind of saw it coming, because he's good friends with Hannity, and I've just never been a fan of Sean Hannity. A close friend of mine and I jokingly have had a joking kind of conspiracy theory running forever that Sean Hannity is a liberal plant to make us all look like bullet point shouting morons. But well done, Mr. President. Thank you for pivoting. Thank you for acting, at least. And it might be acting, and that's fine. I'm sure we've had a bunch of absolute jerks and horrible human beings as presidents. I'm not confused that I think that everyone who's president is like some brilliant, compassionate, thoughtful, mindful human being. No, they're just, we've had some psychos in that office. Just weirdos with issues and stuff, just straight on both sides of the aisle. But at least act presidential. It's like, even if it's acting, you know, just act like you're the president. You're on TV. You've learned how to act. Act like you're the president. So well done. Even if you're acting, well done. All right. So pivoting off of, see what I did there? Pivoting off of politics and getting back to things that actually matter. Well, politics matters. Our public life matters. The way that we put ourselves together. I think it matters. It only matters on this federal level when it gets in the way. So I think I think all politics and all religion is local. And so I think it matters more where it's local. But the problem is that it's hard to be local whenever their localism, or kind of like a local, you know, human scale level of representation and involvement and actual determination, some real subsidiarity, to use the word in Catholic social doctrine, some real subsidiarity isn't possible because of the overreach of government. That's why I'm like, I've kind of been a libertarian-ish or republican with, you know, I kind of lean towards a much smaller federal government. Mostly because I want to see real people have real influence on their local lives, you know? And I just think it seems like whenever we let the federal government get its hands into something, it inevitably, it is kind of a zero sum game. It doesn't have to be, but it seems like it is. It seems like if you're going to have a Department of Education, you know, you're going to end up, you're going to see a backlash against school choice, because then you could have a school that is doing something different than Common Core, or doing something different than what they want you to do. And they want to be the one to tell you what to do. And if you give people real freedom, they might exercise that freedom. And so it's like, it does seem to be kind of a zero sum game. All right. So I spent way longer on politics than I planned. It's Ash Wednesday. I don't want to talk about politics. All right. But anyway, I was trying to be positive. Well done, Mr. President. Thank you for delivering a speech that sounds like the President of the United States. I can't believe I have to thank our president for that, but well done. Okay. On today's show, here's where I want to go. I want to talk a little bit about Ash Wednesday and Lent. I want to talk about this idea of like what has us and what do we have. And I want to talk about what I'm doing for Lent. I'm going to share with you in fairly solid detail what I am trying to do for Lent, how I think that fits into what I think Lent is about, and kind of use that as a kind of a template to talk about some ideas that maybe you might want to consider and what would that look like in your world. And then if we have some time after that, I've just been thinking about having tons of conversations about the place of technology and screens and the internet and all that in our lives, and about spaces where we can get ourselves out of that. So, all right, so you're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you on the other side.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I've been in Lent. You know, it's like they like to yell in at Mardi Gras down in New Orleans, you know, Lent has begun, return to your homes, you know. But I'm kind of saying Lent has begun, return to your homes. I'm going to define what home is in a little while. But one of the things I wanted to do for Lent was to be less political, be less kind of like, I just want to keep my political kind of like media consumption to a certain amount and in a certain space. And I've kind of been like, I've been thinking about the show for Lent, and I really want to just, during Lent, I want to really try to pull away from political commentary. We just got so much of that. We have a decent amount of it on this network, on Breadbox Media. Mark Shea does a lot of that. Leo Brown does a lot of that. I do a lot of that. I'm purposely trying to pull off of that a little bit. So I'm going to try to, so I'm hoping that this Lent, this show will be a place that you can kind of go, look, I just want to hear something mindful and interesting and insightful that is different than all the other media that I hear, which is basically just telling me, what did Trump do today? What are the ramifications? Who protested against that? Who screamed and yelled at each other? And why is it all going to hell in a handbasket? I just want to be something different than that. I permanently, but I want to definitely kind of focus on trying to make that the case over Lent. So hold me to it. If I start getting too political, shoot me an email, thecounterposition@gmail.com. You can tweet me @counterposition, or go to our Facebook page, which I never touch and don't put anything on. I should start putting all these episodes up on the Facebook page. Oh, I need help with my social media. If anybody out there is a social media helper, I've been thinking about getting Sarah the Quitter Stacy to give me a hand while she's on her job search, but I feel bad taking time away from someone when I can't really afford to pay her much. So it's like I feel bad taking time away from somebody's job short search, you know. So there you go. So, okay, Ash Wednesday. You know, I want to talk about Ash Wednesday. Like I said, Ash Wednesday, actually not a holy day of obligation. You don't, quote, have to go to Mass today. It's like, but what's funny is that American Catholics, tons of them miss all these holy days of obligation to the point that lots of dioceses have just stopped almost ever having holy days of obligation during the week, and they just move them to the next Sunday. Which the funniest thing I heard with that was Father Michael O'Loughlin a couple years ago said, "Hey, in the East today is the feast of such and such. I'm sure you guys in the West just moved that to whatever funeral or wedding you happen to go to next time." He got such a sparky kind of conversation on Facebook after that, but. You know, but today, ironically, not a holy day of obligation. Everyone thinks it is, and everyone goes. Now, I don't think, here's my theory on that. I don't think that people go because it's a holy day of obligation. I don't think they go because they think it is. I don't think they go because they're doing something they're supposed to. I think that people, for some reason, at least out here in the Midwest and in the mountain regions and stuff, and away from the coast, especially away from Southern California, I think it's just because we like getting the ashes. I think there's something visceral and different and mystical and kind of real and kind of earthy about going up and having a man in vested in ritual garments, smear ashes on your head in the form of a cross and remind you, remember, man, that thou art dust, to dust thou shalt return. You know, and I think that we need that reminder. We need that reminder that, you know, there's an order of monks or friars, I can't remember which one they are, over in Italy, and I've talked about this on the show before, I'm sure. I've mentioned it all the time to people. But they've got like their cell, you know, where they live, their bedroom, their little cell. Typical monk setup, bed, desk, chair, cross on the wall, couple of books, extra habit, hanging on the back of the door. Human skull. What? Yep. Yeah. Human skull. A skull sitting on their desk. They read, pray, sleep, dress, do all the above in the presence of a skull. And these people, whenever they meet each other, these monks or these friars, whenever they, I think they're friars. I think they're some offshoot of the Capuchins or something. When they meet each other, they say, remember your death, brother. That's how they greet each other. It's like, it's really easy to walk around thinking that there's not an expiration date on this phase, so to speak. That this is what it's all. There's two things that I think we walk around thinking. I know I do. That this is all there is, and it's going to keep going. So I'm going to have time to tell that person I love them that I didn't tell. You know, I have a friend who's an ex-priest who I love to pieces. He's very important in my life. I love that he tries to stay connected to me. I want to stay connected to him. He shot me a text last night. I haven't returned it yet. He texts me. I get busy. I don't return the text. And I think, oh, we need to have a catch-up conversation. You know, I don't. And that guy's sick, too. You know, pray for him. He's got a cancer, I think. He's got cancer of some kind. It's like, I think I have forever to call him. I think I have forever to put things right with my dad. But, you know, if I really understood how precious this moment is and how ephemeral this stuff is, then I don't know, maybe I would just take 7 days off and get in a car and drive there and talk to him. You know, it's so I think that's what Ash Wednesday is about. Ash Wednesday is the priest dips his thumb into the ashes, which, if I'm not mistaken, are made out of the palm leaves from Palm Sunday, which is pretty pretty symbolic there. You know, Christ is coming in to Jerusalem. They're throwing those palms down in front of him. He's riding on a donkey. He's coming in. They're just like hailing him as like a conqueror coming in and just like calling him Lord and all this. And a few days later, they're the same people yelling, crucify him. Give us Barabbas. Crucify him. You know, later in Lent, during Holy Week, we're all going to say those words, crucify him, right? And we're starting it with that because our false praise or our non-committed kind of momentary praise represented by these palm branches gets burned up and just marked on our forehead, and just this priest comes along and just marks an expiration date on our forehead. He's like, hey, remember, man, that thou has an expiration date, or that this phase has an expiration date. The truth is that nobody gets out of here alive, but the other deeper truth is nobody gets out of here dead. It's like you're going to live forever in some kind of situation. Think about that and pay attention to that now, not out of fear, but just going, look, if this is a reality you want to live in permanently, if you want love, then live love now. Just if you be grateful, and then heaven will start right now for you. Just walk in that radical contingency of being a creature and feel that gratitude for your being in love. It'll begin right now. So, you know, but I think we like having that expiration date marked on our forehead and being reminded of that. You know, when I lived in Southern California, when I was going to Thomas Aquinas College, and whenever I was living in Ventura, running my company Coffee Boy and stuff, I used to go to mass on Ash Wednesday, especially like, I think I remember it being like particular, like at Sacred Heart, and God knows what it was like down in Oxnard and stuff, but, the place would be slam packed to the gills with tons of people that you never see at mass. Most of them Mexican, a lot of them kind of like gang culture, kind of like vato dudes, you know, like cholos and stuff. And they would go through mass just hanging out, and they'd be kind of talking and stuff and not acting very mass-like. And then when it came time to get the ashes, they would all go up, get the ashes, and leave. And then during the Eucharistic rite, it would be like, or during, you know, during the rest of mass, I can't remember which comes first, it would be a place to be kind of like empty. You know, it would like be a third of the people that were there would stay till the end of mass, because there was some kind of a superstition or something that if you get the ashes on Ash Wednesday, then you can't be murdered that year. And it's like something in this like gang culture that was part of that area of Southern California. And so you'd just have these huge amounts of people come, and then they would leave after the ashes were on them. They weren't there for mass. They were just there to get those ashes, you know? So that's kind of strange. It's a weird day. It's a day when a lot of the churches are packed, you know, for a lot of people with a lot of reasons. It's just, I would ask you to pray that people would have an encounter with God today, whatever brings them out, whatever reason they want that on their forehead, that they would have an encounter with the living God today. All right, when we get back, I want to talk about what I'm doing for Lent and a couple things. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so... I want to talk about, so a couple days ago I went to Mass. I think it was on Monday. I think it was the gospel from Monday. Because I was meeting Adam. I almost got shot by Wendell Berry Beach to go to Indian food afterwards and talk about Calyx. And sorry, I'm like sniffing in the microphone. I'm suddenly suddenly starting to get all stopped up or something. So the gospel was about the rich young ruler, and as they call him, or the rich young man. This guy goes to Christ and he's like, hey, you know, what should I do to inherit eternal life? What should I do to be perfect? You know, and he's like, well, you know, he says, you know, the commandments, the law and the prophets, and he tells him the standard Jewish line, you know, love God, love your neighbor. And he said, well, I've done that since I was a youth. He goes, you're doing good. He goes, now, just one thing you lack, sell everything you own, come follow me. And the thing that I want to touch on is just the translation. I think it's probably the New American Bible or something. I can't, but the translation says that, and he was very sad. He went away sad because he had many possessions. Many possessions. And for some reason, that word rang weird to me when I heard it in Mass. And because, you know, we use that word, you know, like, well, these possessions we have these things. Right. We've got a car, we got a house, you got a nice watch, you got some books and a bookcase, and you got a new couch. I got a new bed, which I'm kind of stoked about. You know, I've been needing to buy a real bed for a long time. President sale, super cheap, Wayfair.com. I bought a bed, had it delivered, found it on my deck last night when I came home. Gonna put it together this weekend. So I have a new bed. So that's a possession I have, right? We have these possessions, right? Clearly, I need to make sleeping a priority in my life, right? I've been insomnia boy here lately. So we have these possessions. But, you know, that's the same word we use for, like, when something has us. In particular, the devil or a demon. Someone is possessed. There is a possession. They have a possession, you know? Oh gosh, I remember seeing a meme around Halloween or something like that. And it was all red, and it was the red and black. And it was the priest from the movie, The Exorcist, kind of there. And it's like, yeah, everybody wants to make fun of the Catholic Church until you get a demon in your house. And suddenly everybody's on the phone. Like, everybody's in the telephone book looking up the local parish trying to get Father to come over. It's like we use these words, and I think that there's I think there's a meditation there. I think there's something to talk about, because you see people in Christ miss, and I used to hear this all the time when I was a word of faith. I used to be a word of faith, name it, claim it, prosperity gospel dude. I still fight some of that mentality. You know, this idea that, you know, God wants you to be rich or whatever. God wants you to have, you know, these Old Testament kind of, that God still shows his love through physical, you know, health, wealth, and prosperity like in the Old Testament. That's a whole nother story. But one thing that they talk about and they point out, and it's true, you see people like Joseph of Arimathea. I mean, guy's fairly wealthy dude, right? Someone gave Jesus a fairly nice garment to wear, because it was all one piece of cloth woven from one piece, to where they had to cast lots for it. Because they didn't want to tear it in half, because it wouldn't like come apart. It was all one piece. So they cast lots for it. It was something that a Roman soldier would want to take. So, I mean, Christ, you know, let people give him something nice sometimes. You know, he obviously had people around him that had some cash on him. Joseph of Arimathea had a nice new tomb that nobody had ever been laid in that he'd bought for himself, and he gives it to Jesus, puts Jesus in it. You know, that's a, that was a, not a cheap thing. You know, it's like, so there's people around Christ who have money that you don't hear them ever getting challenged the way this kid was, right? So it just hit me, that word possession, that you can have things, or things can have you. And, you know, we've got saints of all kinds, but most of the saints lived holy poverty of some kind. Probably because most of the saints were religious of some kind, and they would have a vow of poverty. But why is that? Because it's hard to have stuff and not let it have you. The more you have, the more it kind of gets of you. And the more you start putting your, you know, just recently, I remember I was saving up for a car. I don't make a lot of money at all. And I had been saving up for a car. You know, I had some consulting gigs and some stuff, and kind of instead of spending it, I put it back in. And I started shopping for a car, and I had a good sized chunk of change for me. For anyone else, it'd be a paltry savings. For any grown man my age, mostly I'm still Peter Pan, you know, I'd live in paycheck to paycheck. But I had, for the first time in a really long time, I had some money in the bank. In fact, I had right about the amount of money that I sold my first company for, just because it wasn't worth a whole lot. But I remember feeling back then in like 2006, like, man, I could live for like 6 months to a year. I could live for a while on this. I could kind of stretch it if I didn't, you know, I mean, I was thinking, man, this is a good amount of money. It was not that much money, you know, but you know, I paid off a couple things and I bought a car. I needed a car. And my family in Kansas, if you listen to the show, you heard me talk about that. I bought this Chevy Cruze off of my family, 80,000 miles on it or something, still has some warranty. And I don't have a car payment now. But so I needed transportation. My car had 213,000 miles on it about. I noticed that when I had that money in the bank, there was a certain solidity to that. There was a certain feeling to that. Now, that's not bad. You should have some savings. Get some savings. I'm going to try to get some. But it's funny. It's like, you know, I felt, even though it wasn't really enough to carry me if something happened, it wasn't that much money, but it felt different, right? And it's like, well, and I saw, like, saying, what is that? You know, is that, and it wasn't until it was gone and I was kind of back to it. I had a couple of close moments where I was kind of, I'm kind of close right now, actually. I'm going to get a paycheck in the next day or two, and I'm going to use that paycheck to pay rent. You know, I've got a couple of invoices out that'll hopefully refill the kitty a little bit, but from consulting. But I, you know, it's like it's a thing. You know, it's like, you know, but that relationship with stuff, and you might be poor, and just the little that you have just has you. And you might be able to be rich. There are people who are able to be rich and they're just not attached to it. I have a couple of friends that are just straight up loaded. I have some acquaintances here in Denver that are just like loaded, like immense amounts of money, like more money than them or their kids and their grandkids and their grandkids' kids could probably spend in a lifetime if they lived a remotely normal life, nice lifestyle. And they are like the most generous people I've met. I mean, they spend their life giving their money away. That's what they do for a living. They give their money away, right? So God knows who he can trust that stuff with. If you see yourself as a steward of that, you're the guy that's like, it's your job to distribute this where it goes. And, you know, then you'll end up with some probably. If not, you know, I mean, and then it's like, you know, some people like JP2, God love him. He's like his students at St. Stanislaus, Stanislaus, Stanislaus in Krakow whenever he was a parish priest at the university parish there, they figured out that if you bought Father Wojtyła something, you had to steal the thing you were replacing or he would give it away. So they would buy him a nice new sweater because his sweater was old and falling apart, and he'd still have the old sweater on. You'd find out that he gave the new sweater to a poor person or something. They did it with a razor one time. So they had to like literally like distract him, go into his house, steal the old one and replace it with a new one because he would give it away. Now, some of that, I think, in our Western tradition or in the Christian tradition, we put a little much too much emphasis on it. And we don't tell the story of the people who are saints who have kids and who, because they have kids and a family, they actually take the time to put back some savings and get the proper health care and do all the above. We don't live a nice normal life. And that's how most people become saints. And we don't talk about that enough. But I guess that's the thing I want to think about. The first thing you can kind of ask yourself, and are some of the things that I'm asking myself. I mean, even there's like secular people, they're like doing the minimalist movement now, where there's a guy in Japan I read an article about. It's got, he owns 150 things. And like a pair of socks is a thing. A pair of underwear is a thing. He owns 150 things. And if he gets something new, he gets rid of something. So even people are figuring out that, even from a secular perspective, that can actually free them up and some stuff. So one thing we could do during Lent is have a look at what we have and what has us. And that might not even be physical things. And I'm going to talk about that when we get back. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the colored glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. So the final segment here, I'm going to give up griping about having to run the open mile as a fat shot putter in high school and thinking bad thoughts about Coach Henderson and Coach Martin and Coach Gammon. I'm gonna give that up for Lent too. All right, final segment. We're talking about Lent. We're talking about kind of what it means and what it's about. We talked a little bit about possessions and whether they have us or we have them. Might be something worth looking at. Maybe give some crap away this Lent. You know, we're supposed to give alms, pray and give alms and make sacrifices. You know, I know Father Riley has always said that kind of like in Advent, it's kind of good to kind of focus on giving alms. And in Lent, kind of focus more on the sacrifice thing if you have to pick one. I think that's good. So I'll tell you what I'm doing for Lent. And then we're going to talk about kind of how that might apply in different places. People think that we give up. Here's the thing. Here's what people think Lent is. Lent is like, there's this stuff that you shouldn't be doing anytime. And then during Lent, you're going to give it up. But kind of the implied thing is like, after Easter, I'm going to go back to it, right? No, if something is sinful, you should never be doing it. Stop that. Try not to do that. You can't give up, you know. I mean, how stupid would that be? I'm going to give up robbing banks for Lent. But man, I can't wait for Easter. I'm going to go rob me a bank. I mean, no, you don't do that. No, so what you're doing is you're giving up something good. And what you're doing with fasting or with giving up something, you know, we talk about a lot in that in terms of like penance, like, you know, but I kind of want to get away from that language. You're going to hear a lot of that language, you know, offering up these penances, like, but we hear the penance like a punishment or like, and in the West, we do a lot of this talk about reparations and suffering and all that. And I mean, that's fine. I don't really respond to that that way of talking theologically very well. And I've just come to accept that and go, that's just not my path. What we're trying to do is to make the main thing the main thing. So there's a video that some religious, I think they were a community of St. John based on their habits. I couldn't really tell. But they had, it's one of those, I've seen this before where it's like, you know, you have this big glass jar and you've got some big chunky rocks, you've got kind of some gravel and you have a bunch of sand. And so they put all the sand in first and then they put all the little small rocks in and then there's no room for the big pieces, right? And so they sorted it all back out. Then if you put these big chunks in, and they were saying, this is like prayer. This is like focusing on your family. This is like being mindful to the people around you, whatever. You know, these things that we need to put first. Then you put these small things in, you know, and then you put even like this little ephemeral, like little tiny things in with the sand. If you get them in order, if you put them in your life in order, then they all fill in and there's room. Right. But it's all about the order you put them in. So that's part of what Lent is about, is it might not even be about getting anything in or giving anything up. It might be about putting things in order. Right. So and let me tell you what I'm doing. So I think that Lent is a good time to do something that's going to be kind of hard and be kind of sacrificial, but be good for you. Right. And so I have been meaning for a long time to get back on autoimmune paleo protocol. I've got an autoimmune diagnosis with Hashimoto's disease. I haven't been taking care of myself in the way I need to. And I'm starting to get some really serious inflammation again. And I'm starting to feel some inflammatory action and stuff. I've been back on gluten for a while and being bad with that. And there was some stuff that I haven't felt since like 2009, 2010. Some certain inflammatory pain and stuff that I'm feeling again. And I'm realizing that I'm putting stuff into me that is just not good for me. It's not what I need to be doing. And I need to figure out what those things are. And so I'm going to do autoimmune paleo protocol. Now, this is kind of like, you know, a lot of people have heard of people doing Whole 30 and stuff like that. It's kind of like that. So basically paleo is going to be the removal of all grains, all dairy, all legumes, which would be beans and peanuts and stuff, sugar, what else, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? And so you're down to like fruits, vegetables, nuts. Some people eat butter and call it primal instead of paleo. They eat grass-fed butter like Kerrygold. I usually, you know, we certainly eat eggs and stuff like that. Now, the autoimmune part is you remove further stuff that might be causing some inflammation and some reaction and stuff. So you remove eggs, you remove nuts, you remove nightshades, which are like potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, some of these things. You remove those things. You remove these nightshades, anything in a nightshade family. You remove all sweeteners, even paleo-friendly sweeteners like honey or like rice syrup or something like that. You get rid of all these, even stevia. You just don't use any sweeteners at all. There's no dairy at all. There's all these different things. No eggs. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that you can't have that you could normally have on paleo, but you remove them. No alcohol. That's the other thing, is I'm giving up. And I normally give up alcohol for Advent and Lent, and I usually do the Sunday exception. But the Sunday exception turns into the Saturday night. I kind of do it Jewish style, you know. It turns into like basically from Saturday afternoon until like Sunday night, I just end up drinking a lot. And it's like, that's just this time around. The last couple times I've tried, it used to be a breeze. It's been kind of hard. And I'm quite honestly not super comfortable with how much I'm drinking these days. And more, not so much the amount, but my motives in how hard it is to not do that, because I think I'm using it as a way to cope with stress a little bit. And so I'm going to rip that away for a while and kind of focus on it and focus on some other stuff. So that's a, you know, I was just talking to my friend Anne, and she does the same thing every Advent, every Lent. And as you get older, it's like it gets a little harder to do. So, you know, my old man had a problem with the alcohol. So I'm like, I'm kind of conscious of it. So this is, but that's part of the protocol, right? The part that's hardest for me is you're supposed to have like one cup of coffee a day tops. And that's the part that I don't always do as well on, because I do coffee for a living and I'm around coffee 24/7 tasting and I don't get enough sleep and everything. So I'm going to try to stick to it. Probably not going to do that today. Days when I'm running on 3 hours sleep, like I am today, 3.5 hours sleep, I'm probably not going to do one cup of coffee. I wouldn't be able to give my employer and people, you know, the people I work for and do business for, their due on that. So the other thing I'm wanting to do is I'm going to try to get less screen time. I'm going to take, I took a ton of stuff off my phone. I took the Facebook app off my phone. I'm going to try to like check Facebook maybe like once a day and just kind of see. I'm leaving the Messenger on my phone because, we use it, like even in Breadbox Media, we use that a lot. And I'll check maybe once a day, just scan through and see if there's any mission critical. Cause some of my friends kind of use that as, you know, like even in Breadbox Media, like we'll post, we have certain communities and stuff for all the hosts and they'll post an update about something technical or something in there, you know? So I kind of have to be there. So, but I'm going to try to pull way back, not, you know, not cat videos and crap like that, you know, try to start, you know, getting less screen time. Okay, I'm going to take the TV out of my room, stick it in the closet, put the Apple TV downstairs. So yeah, I can still watch Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I can still watch some crappy superhero show, but I'm going to do it in public with my roommates and instead of like hunkering down in my room and binging on something, you know? So I'm going to kind of, I've got my new bed coming in, so I'm going to rearrange my room. And when I do, I'm going to take the screen down. I'm going to try to black it out a little better so I can sleep a little better. And I'm just going to try to get a little more analog, be more quick to take a walk, a little more quick to get an old book and sit and read it next to a lamp instead of watching TV. I'm just going to try to get a little more analog. So, and then we'll see what happens and what sticks. So then before we get to the end of the break, end of the show here, that's what I would suggest you do with Lent. Just look at all the stuff that like kind of might have you, you know, maybe that's not even physical. Like I said before, maybe it's bitterness. Maybe it's an unforgiveness. Maybe it's just a pattern of thought that, you know, ruminating on some kind of hurt or some kind of frustration, you know, whatever it is. Look at your life. Look at what you eat. Look at what, you know, instead of like doing some big, like, I'm going to give this thing up. Just look at your life and go, look, are there some things that like maybe I would just be better without? Pick those things to give up. And then see, you know, maybe you give up 4 or 5 things. Maybe you change the way you eat. Maybe you, you know, stop watching TV in the evening and you limit your TV to the weekends and only a few hours or something like that. And then at the end of Lent, then now you've got all this stuff. You can go over to that table, that metaphorical table. Look at all the crap you took out of your life. Examine how you feel and how you're embrace, how you're kind of engaging reality at that point. And then make a conscious decision of what to pick up off that table and put back into your life. You know, that's, I think, the thing that Lent's about for me at least. So, all right, there you go. Happy Lent. Woo. I read the end of the book. Don't tell anyone. He gets up. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. See you next time.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.